Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Bushball. My name's Don Patzer. I'm your host. In today's podcast, we talked to John Susak. He is a longtime baseball coach in the Sacramento area, but he is also, along with his brother Nick, have developed a kind of a baseball super family in Sacramento, and we're going to get into that and who they are and where they're playing. We're also going to talk about baseball fields and birth certificates and Marv Marinovich. It's going to be a great episode. John really brings the energy. I know you'll enjoy it. So sit back, relax, and strap in, because John Susak brings it.
John Susak has been involved in developing some of the best young talent in the country over the last 10 years. And now the longtime coach is going to share with Bushball the before they went pro perspective. The Susak family is littered with D1 players at some of the best programs in America. And his World Series champion nephew, Andrew Susak, is just the beginning. John, welcome to Bushball.
Thanks, Don. I appreciate you calling me in. Let's go break it down, man.
Let's break it down, exactly. And so, you know, John, I know that you are very involved in particularly the travel ball world and developing young kids when they get into high school and getting them prepared for the next level, which is a part that we haven't talked about in Bushball. We talk about our minor league players, but a lot of times we don't talk about how they got there. And I think coaches like yourself and programs that you've developed will give us a really good perspective into that. My first question, I know that you've got several family members that have been very successful. Can you kind of break down who they are, where they are, and
sure,
that kind of thing?
Well, so just in my immediate family, I've got a sister and a brother and myself. So my brother has three boys. He has two boys, Andrew Susak, who's currently playing with the Pittsburgh Pirates, and Matthew Susak, who played Division I baseball, went to the University of Nevada via junior college route to the D1 route. And then my brother had a son 10 years later, Daniel, who, in my opinion, is the best of that Susak bunch. Mm-hmm. Well, then I had a son and daughter, and his name is Anthony, and my daughter's Sophia. And she is swimming, synchronized swimming at Stanford currently. And my son, Anthony, and Daniel have played together since they've been, as far as organized baseball, since they've been 6 years old. So a lot of people kind of confuse them a lot of times as brothers because we have the same last name, but they're cousins. Right. But our family is super, super close. I mean, it's like, you know, Each boy has two fathers and two mothers. So
right.
That part of it, I see how people do that, but we are a very, very close-knit family.
Yeah.
And I was very, you know, at the beginning, I was, as far as coaching goes, I was very, very involved with my two nephews, Andrew and Matt. And then, you know, I had a boy 10, 11 years later, and my brother had another boy. And we kind of, our story is we got to do it all over again. It kind of panned out as baseball players, man. They're pretty good.
When did you guys decide, you know what, we're going to take these boys and we're going to develop them into top-rated ball players?
His son, Andrew, and Matt were becoming pretty good Little League baseball players, and he asked me to coach, and we did. And I'll be honest with you, Don, it wasn't crazy, like, you know, with coaching, but we practiced every day. We organized practices, and it was just Little League out in Roseville, California. And we put together really, really good competitive practices, and we got these kids really, really good. And I think we made it fun. But we worked hard and we developed, and Andrew just kept getting better and better and better. And for my own personal deal, I kind of started putting a lot of time and energy and my money into my nephew. And, you know, as things started progressing, he ended up being one of the top high school players in the country, got a full ride scholarship to Oregon State, was a second round draft pick out of Oregon State, signed for over $1 million at the time. And, 2.5 years later, won a World Series with the Giants. He was backing up Buster Posey. So it's been a fun ride. And then, you know, like I said, 10 years later, we were tagging along our two little boys to everything we were doing with Andrew and Matt. So they were always in that environment and around baseball, and they absolutely loved it. I've got a great story, but I didn't realize this. But when I first started coaching Little League, I never realized this, but there is a birthday deadline. Like, you know, you're an 11U or you're a 12U, you're a 10U, you're a 9, and the deadline has always been August 1st. And so when I started coaching Little League for the very first time, I'm coaching with this guy named Tom Bryce, and he's going, "Hey, man, it matters if you have a later birthday." And I had no clue. Well, I had an awful birthday. Anything before July is not considered a good birthday because the deadline is August 1st. So right. I was July 14th as a Little Leaguer. So I never realized this. I had no clue when I played All-Stars. I was 11. We got knocked out of All-Stars, and I was still 11, but I was a 12U player because it's July 14th. So it's always better. You get a little bit of an extra year just by when you're born. And I never realized this until I started coaching. So when my wife was pregnant with Anthony, we knew we were having a boy and we were going to have a scheduled C-section. So she came home one day and goes, "Hey, honey, we set the schedule for Anthony to be born July 26th. And I go, "No." She goes, "What are you talking about?" I go, "It's the worst sports birthday you can possibly have." She goes, "What the hell are you talking about?" I explained to her. And she goes, "You know what? I'm embarrassed. I am not going to go change this scheduled C-section with a doctor. If you really want to change it to August 1st, go ahead and do it." I go, "Perfect." So the next doctor's appointment, I went to the doctor with her and I explained him my story. And he goes, "You know what, John? I've delivered over 40,000 babies. I have never, ever, ever had anybody ask me to delay a scheduled C-section so he would have a good sports birthday." And I go, "You know what? I'm all for it. I think it's a great story. He goes, "Let's make it August 2nd. I go, "Perfect. As long as it's after August 1st, you're on." At 11:27 at night, on July 30th, my wife's water broke. And so Anthony was going to be born July 31st. No matter what, there's nothing I could do. And if you were there, if I could have videotaped it, I was going nuts. "Are you kidding me? There's no way. There's no way. He's going to now have the worst sports birthday to the day, July 31st, one day away from the magic day, right?" And this is what I'm going to do, Don. We're scattering to go to the hospital. It's 3 a.m. It's now 3 a.m, July 31st. I'm going to ask the doctor to change the birth certificate to August 1st. I'm dead serious. This is all for baseball, right? He's not even born yet.
Oh, of course. Of course.
And my wife just starts chewing me out. You got a son. You better be happy for that. Screw the birthday, blah, blah, blah. And the doctor walks in around 3:30. I go, "Hey, doc, we didn't hit our date." And he goes, "Yeah, I know." I go, "Hey, would you mind changing it to August 1st? And he just looks me in the eye. Goes, "Are you?" And he dropped an F-bomb. Goes, "Are you effing kidding me?" And I go, "Oh, yeah, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking around." But I really wasn't. So anyhow, he was born on July 31st, right?
Oh.
The worst sports birthday. So anyhow, I'm going to go even further. I'm going to go buy 10 birth certificates. I'm going to change his birth certificate one day. I'm going to change the 0731 to 0801. And I'm going to do it. I'm not letting this beat me. I'm just not. I bought 10 birth certificates. They're $5 a piece. So anyhow, that's my story. I was going to do it. And then they changed. 2 years later, they changed the Little League deadline to May 1st. They completely changed.
I know.
So when you asked me, did I think this guy was going to be a baseball player? It was kind of planned that way.
I could just maybe hear it like, "Come on, honey, don't be selfish. Hold it in."
She's probably more the scary story on her. She's probably more competitive than I am. That's the funny part. But I introduced baseball to all, you know, and my brother did to all these kids. Honestly, man, keep them out of trouble. You know, just, hey, go.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I never got into any major trouble as a kid. Didn't do any crazy stuff because I was busy playing sports. And I think I went in there to, like, you know, hey, sports keep you busy. I kind of.
Absolutely.
And my brother, we developed our own kids. They didn't learn how to play baseball like we learned how to play baseball by going outside to play wiffle ball, you know?
No.
So we did a lot of the work. And I've been super, super blessed with all the boys that they truly loved playing sports. Like, they liked it. It wasn't that I didn't have to push them hard. And still to this day with my son and my nephews, they're self-motivated, man, you know? And not everybody's that way. I've been lucky that way. You know, and I think the way we introduced it at a young age, we made it fun for them. that yep. they, my son couldn't wait for me to come home to play wiffle ball with him. Just couldn't wait.
Right.
He was little, really little,
right.
with just
right.
a box full of wiffle balls. And so from that standpoint, you know, you never know. But I always said if he had a good high school career, stayed out of trouble, and I spend a lot of time with my kids and my nephews, it's all been worth it.
I keep hearing about this field that you built in your neighborhood. Or can you talk about the field that you built for your teams?
Sure. I kind of, you know, like I was telling you before, as far as coaching, I had a great Little League experience with my at Wood Creek Little League with my nephew Andrew and Matt. And you know, as they grew out of Little League and went a different way, and we came back into the league, I just saw a big change in Little League and a big change in baseball itself, and it started to get to be travel ball a lot more. But I kind of like the concept of travel ball. And what everybody said, the problem with travel ball is there's no fields. There's nowhere to play. You got to fight with Little League for fields. And where we own a business, there is a park that used to be a Little League, and it's no longer around anymore. But the infrastructure to the field was great. They built new backstops, dugouts, stands, maybe about 8 years earlier. But the field was just a mess. Just a complete mess. So I literally, me and my business partner, Dave Williams, actually donated money when they rebuilt the field a while back. And so we decided to go to the school district and want to rebuild our own travel ball baseball field. And so we kind of did a public-private partnership and told the school, hey, anytime you guys want to use it, so, you know, we'll let you use it. Just let us take care of it. And we put about $30,000 of our own dollars and did all the work ourselves and built this incredible, incredible travel ball size baseball field with hitting cages, all kinds of things. I'm not kidding you. One of the nicest fields you've ever seen. And we built the whole thing. Everything ourselves. Another little sidebar story. Again, if I don't have an answer to somebody, I found out and I had some questions about grass and leveling the field that the Sacramento River Cats, the AAA team, I went online and found the grounds crew's number and sent some pictures and asked some questions if I'm doing things right. And I sent pictures to him. The next day, he and his own grounds crew all showed up to my field and goes, I have never seen two dads or three dads do what you guys are doing privately to a field with like no experience. I brought my whole grounds crew to check it out. So I kind of developed a relationship, but he thought I was crazy. Like, oh my God, nobody's gone to this length to build this field to what we did to the playing surface like you guys
did.
I got the same grass that the San Francisco Giants got, the same infield mix. I mean, this thing was incredible. So basically, we built our own field that I had complete control over. It was a full-blown field. We had two 70-foot tunnels on the visitors, and both sides we would put split cages. I mean, you know, we had 12 kids and when we hit, I mean, we had four or five stations going on. It was just complete constant work. I mean, we ran a college practice when these kids were 9 and 10 years old. Me and my business partner, Dave Williams, we mowed it 3 days a week. And I think we had it for 6 years, and then we kind of outgrew the field.
You had a giant man cave,
you know,
John. It was a man cave.
It's cool stuff. It's really, really cool stuff. So the field's still there. I kind of gave it to another team. It is a lot of work taking care of a field. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, me and my buddy Dave were really, really dedicated in taking care of the field all the time.
So what did typical day look like for the SUSAC boys? You know, what did training look like?
Well, high school, you know, a lot of it is, you know, off season and on season. Now again, like my nephews, Daniel and Andrew, they were catchers. My son's a pitcher, so they kind of train differently. My son's on a very heavy, stringent velocity program. It's called Driveline. He's been doing it since he's been in fourth grade. A lot of weightlifting, a lot of nutrition. So there's off season training and there's on season training, and then there's breaks. I make him take 3 months off. We don't pretty much never stop weightlifting, but I make him shut down for 3 months all the time as far as pitching goes. And then on the hitting side, like with a kid like Daniel, now Daniel was a two sport player. He was an unbelievable football player who was definitely a D1 quarterback. So he would shut baseball down for 5 months and just concentrate on football. And he played quarterback his whole life since he was 8 years old. My son never played tackle football. He played a little bit of basketball and flag football and stuff like that in elementary school, and then pretty much just played baseball. if we were on the off season, my son was constantly doing some type of a throwing program, almost weight lifts every single day. Just about, I would say, 5 to 6 days a week, they weight train, both of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot. We hit at night. Daniel would still hit at night after he was done with football practice. So, so his day started at 6:30 in the morning, and he was done with practice at 7 o'clock at night.
Right.
He'd go home, do homework, eat, maybe go hit, go to bed, and do it all over again.
Let me ask you this. So baseball is between the ears, right? It's that game. It's a smart man's game. And how did you teach the mental side of the game? What was your approach?
The mental side of the game, as far as baseball goes, in my opinion, is the hardest part to really, really teach. I think part of it you have to experience. And the part that's tough on baseball with the mental side is baseball is a failing sport. Nobody likes to fail. I always tell people, like, right, when you go play baseball, you can't hide. If there's a really good pitcher, everybody has to hit against them. You know, when you strike out, you got to walk back to the dugout. I mean, think about it. When you fail 70% of the time, you're going to go to the Hall of Fame. And, you know, it's funny. I've learned a lot of things from talking to scouts and talking to people. I'll never forget a thing. And I pass this on to kids about making them feel better when they do fail, because that's when it's when it's tough. I always tell them, don't get too high on the highs and too low on the lows. But when Andrew was being heavily scouted, I always ask the scout, like, hey, what do you look for when you come in? And they'd always say, hey, when we come to Jesuit, we're going to look at this, this, this. One guy said something really interesting. And Andrew was, like I said, one of the top catchers in the country at the time. He goes, Andrew, I want to see you strike out 3 times and see how you catch. And that was really, 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 really interesting to me. In other words, we know you're really good. You're a high school hitter. You probably hit 500. But a lot of these young kids, when they get to the minor leagues, they've had so much high school success. They really haven't failed that much. And so a lot of scouts and a lot of people don't see that side to a kid. I've always kind of taught kids, when you fail, go do something great. Go make a great play. Go get a base hit. Go make go throw somebody out. Be a good team leader. You know, are you the guy that's just moping on the bench because you haven't done well? Or are you a good team player?
Exactly.
Scouts look at that stuff, man. They're looking at your makeup.
That's right.
You know, you always see those kids. He's mentally tough.
That's right.
And some of that comes from, hey, man, we threw you in the wolves. I want you to fail. I want my kid to get. I used to put my son, because he was the youngest on our team, I wanted him to get his teeth kicked in when he pitched, man, because, that's what makes you great. You can't just win all
you
the
time. You want to see him bounce
you will
back.
Fail.
Because the bounce back
absolutely
is where you grow. That's where you grow.
Absolutely. And I think as parents, and I don't know where we get this from, Don, because my generation wasn't like that. I'm 54 years old. We're so scared to let our kids fail sometimes, man. And you got to let them fail.
It's true.
And if they learn from that, that's what makes them great.
Which kind of brings me to, I know you're very proud of your Croatian heritage, and talk about how you're like first generation, right? First generation.
I am first generation.
Right. And how a first generation, family coming from Croatia creates this, baseball super family. Where did that come from?
I think my parents knew nothing about sports. They were great parents. Yeah. They were awesome. Typical immigrant parents, worked hard, wanted us to get educated. My dad knew nothing about baseball. Honestly, my brother and I learned how to play sports just playing outside with the kids. Everybody played wiffle ball. Everybody played 2-on-2. Football, you created your own rules. You may have fist fought your best friend over a call, and you were best friends 10 minutes later. We invented games.
Right.
You found a way to compete. If you had 2 kids, they one pitched, one played in the outfield, and you shut down right field and you couldn't hit it there, So we were pretty, ingenious or inventive on finding out ways to play, because we would get bored. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have video games. We didn't have all these things. My parents made us work so much. Like, they really did. My dad was an electrician, but we always had chores that we couldn't. Yeah. We hated working so much around the house. We couldn't wait to go play, and we really appreciated playing. We saw all of our friends playing that we loved playing. So, from that standpoint, I was just a solid little high school player. I wasn't some superstar great player, but one thing about myself, when it came to when I played high school baseball, I was super passionate about the game. I was a self-taught athlete. I didn't know if I was doing things right or wrong, Don. I would just try goofy things to see if it would make me better.
Yeah, right.
What I tell everybody, I didn't have a, you know, my brother's name is Nick. I tell my kids and my nephews, I didn't have a Nick Susak or a John Susak in my life. I wish I did. I wish I had somebody that would show me BP, do these things and tell me. I tried to figure it all out on my own. And I think that kind of carried over to me coaching in Little League. When I first really, really started coaching, I was very organized. I just did a lot of basic stuff, taught fundamentals. And then I started learning more about the game and doing things and implementing things that I learned playing. I played 1 year of junior college baseball, but implementing it to the younger kids. And I just got really, really good at it. It was fun. And our kids loved it. And we shared a passion with our kids. And I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah,
I had a
absolutely.
Blast.
Absolutely. So I heard a story that is it true that one of your boys turned down answer this if you want. I know it's kind of personal, but turned down a significant MLB signing bonus to play collegiately?
Yeah, he signed. So last year's draft was very, very tricky. They only had 5 rounds, which is the first time they've ever done it this way. We're normally something round. So they only had 5 rounds, and we all knew Daniel was going to be one of the top high school players in the country. Daniel, we knew we were going to have a big, big decision to make, and a little bit has to do with, you know, what you want to say that he's worth. But basically, we wanted a certain amount of money, and they offered one team, the Padres offered him $2 million, and we said no. And the Royals said 2-1, and we said no. And we wanted 2-5, and we came back at 2-3, and they said no. And 5 minutes later, they drafted another kid, and it was over just that fast. But basically, you had to make the whole draft in the old days, normally they draft you and you negotiate everything. They couldn't lose. Each team only had 4 or 5 kids. So they have to make sure that you're going to sign before. So we didn't. I feel like Daniel is going to end up being one of the top catchers in the country. Our family's kind of pro going to college. I think, you know, being a minor leaguer at 17 years old is really, really tough. I think, you learn a lot in college. You learn how to take care of yourself, you know, all these non-baseball things that you do.
Right.
College catchers, if you're a very successful college catcher, the success rate of making it to the big leagues is much higher. High school catchers just, and I'm not saying he wouldn't make it, but high school catchers, it's not a very good track record of making it to the big leagues. So that was our decision, you know, and we put a heavy price tag on him. And, we're either going to be the smartest people in the world or the dumbest people, but, you know, he bet on himself that, you know, getting a couple of years of education under his belt, getting mature, getting better, getting stronger, he's going to come out a much better player through college than he is. That was kind of our mindset in a nutshell.
And you know what? He won't regret it. He'll look back.
No.
You know, he'll get his college experience. And, you know, I can tell you there's nothing like the college experience.
Yeah. And there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot to the whole drafting a catcher and catcher success rates. They're much, much better. I mean, college baseball players as a number are a lot more successful than high school players as a number. I want to say, and again, give or take, I want to say 25% of baseball is Latin, 25% are high school kids, and about, you know, 45 to 50% are college kids. So college kids make better pros. Yeah, it was a lot of money. It was a lot of money to turn away.
It was, and I'm sure that was stressful for your family. But the good thing is, you guys are a tight unit. You know, it's not going to make or break, you know, anybody's life. You know what I mean? There's. But anyway, let's. I want to move on because recently I was thinking about, there was this documentary about Todd Marinovich. And Todd Marinovich, for listeners who don't know him, was a superstar. They called him a Robo QB back in the 80s. But the story wasn't really about Todd Marinovich. It was about his dad, Marv. And Marv Marinovich got a lot of criticism on how he trained his son, Todd. But I wanted to talk to John because John is kind of in that realm of like, okay, I want to train these kids to have the best opportunity to get the most out of their ability to go as far as they can. And so, John, can you give me your take on like Marv's approach now almost 30 years later?
I mean, that's the funny thing. So the running joke with me is some people started calling me Marv Marinovich, and they were basically saying that because me and my brother would do these different training things with our kids. Like I said, Don, I'm pretty open-minded. Like, you know,
yeah.
You know, when people ask
yeah.
you a question, what would happen if you did A, B, and C? And my answer was, I don't know. Let's go try it. You know,
yeah.
Let's go see if it works. You know, I can't answer that unless we try it. So we would do different training sessions with Andrew in the garage, and we'd tie these wrist weights to his ankles and his arms. We'd do all these different exercises, and they were really, really hard. We'd get a weighted bat. We would hit these things. I did all these wrist workouts, and we called it the Rambo workout in the garage. And all these kids would try it to come over from Jesuit in high school. This is back in 2006. And they never show back up again. And we did them 3 to 4 days a week. So, you know, people started calling me Marv Marinovich, you know, and I knew who Marv Marinovich was. And I don't think they were doing it in a bad way, but kind of like, man, this guy's nuts, you know, but in a good way. And it's funny, and you probably got this from my buddy Tim Anderson, because he used to call me that all the time, Marv. But I decided to go, you know, I knew Marv's whole story. I know who he was. I was a Raider fan. I know everything about him. I didn't give myself that name, but I decided to look up Marv Marinovich, just like refresh my mind. It's been 30 years. And I did.
Sure. Sure.
And here's the funny story. I went back and read a story about what Marv Marinovich was doing in Sports Illustrated and all these things. And the funny story is everything he's doing 30 years ago, everybody's doing now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Everybody.
Yeah.
So Marv Marinovich was a strength training coach for the Raiders.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in the day when I was playing baseball, we were told don't weightlift. Don't get your arms
right.
too big. It's not, you know.
Exactly.
And I've always said what the steroid era proved is getting stronger helps you in baseball. So Marv Marinovich was doing all this plyometric work, all these different things that everybody's doing right now. Marv Marinovich hired Tom House, who's a famous pitching coach.
Yes.
Back then he was a pitching coach, I believe, at USC or just in Southern California, to work on Todd's throwing mechanics. Well, almost every single kid that's a pretty good pitcher right now has his own personal pitching coach, has his own hitting coach. They're all lifting somewhere. They all got their strength coaches. So all the stuff that was crazy outside the box 30 years ago, I'm not kidding you, is totally normal now. It's pretty darn normal.
Now that's a hilarious story because I remember back in the day they thought he was a mad scientist, right? Now it's kind of like you said, it's the way things are done.
Yeah, it just really is. In other words, he was cutting edge is what I'm trying to tell you. He was doing it when nobody else was, but the funny story about it is that's normal for everybody. And again, Tom House, famous pitching coach. Well, almost every pitching coach does side lessons now. You know, if you've got the money to do it and you know somebody, you can go have Tom House give you pitching lessons all day long.
What's your take on players playing multiple sports?
I'm all for it. What I am seeing sometimes when I talk to baseball coaches and they go, oh, these kids just specialize, you know, one sport. I kind of see it a different way. I am seeing that, and I dealt with it coaching in high school, every sport now, if you want to, you can play it all year. The demands are unbelievable for football. In the old days when football season was over, you went and played basketball. When basketball is over, you went and played. Now you have summer baseball. You have winter baseball and you have regular baseball, depending on the school. And I'm in high school right now, depending on, you know, some of these guys, they make it tough to play two sports. That's why you don't see it. I think you don't see it more now because the demand, you know, because you're playing baseball during baseball, you're missing spring football. You know, you're playing summer baseball, you're missing passing league, you know, or weightlifting because you got a game that day. You can't weightlift for football. So I think a lot of the demands and every school is different that they put on the kids. It makes it really, really hard for these kids to do three sports physically, just to do it. Some kids, Don, are the kid that's a marginal baseball player and a good football player, and he plays shortstop. That one kid that does play all year, he's getting better at baseball, where the guy that's playing football or basketball, he's a little behind when he comes out. So sometimes the specialized kid does pass up the other guy, you know, from a standpoint if he's playing all year around. So I do run into that where I see some of these guys getting a lot better. So I think some of these kids start to go, well, I'll never be a tight end in football, but I could be a center fielder in baseball. I'm going to quit football and go concentrate on baseball. That does happen a lot. They look at what's my best chance to get a scholarship in a sport, and they concentrate on that sport.
But I think a lot more goes on with the demands of all the other sports that it's really, really hard for these kids to do. For sure, three. Two is pretty hard, too. So, again, yeah. I lived it with my son, with my nephew, Daniel. And I think in a crazy, crazy way, because of Corona and him missing some really important summer baseball stuff that he had to, you know, quarterback and do some things, the exposure where these guys, you know, if they're going to go spend $1 million on you, they got to see you really, really well. They want to see you over and over again. That's a big move.
Oh, for sure.
And basically with Daniel, it was like, okay, we're going to watch you play in high school. Well, we only played 3 games. So now you're asking for a lot of money, and they're going, well, we really, really like him, but we've only seen him. We haven't seen him play enough. So, you know, that's how it goes. But I'm very pro. I think it makes you a better athlete. I think all those things of playing, too, but I also think it's pretty hard to do.
Yeah.
And I think most of these kids that are good athletes do play. I think when it gets into high school, it gets harder. But most of these kids at their elementary schools are playing on the school basketball team. They're playing flag football or Pop Warner. I think they do. I think when it gets into high school and starts to become a lot more demanding is when they probably start specializing a lot more than I would say they're doing it in sixth or seventh grade.
Right.
That's my opinion.
Well, yeah,
it's hard to do, though.
I think some sports are lend themselves though to it too, the seasons, because if you try to play basketball and baseball, it's problematic. If you try to play football and baseball, it's still problematic, but you can pull it off because one's in the fall, one's in the spring. You might miss fall ball, but if you're a top flight athlete, you know, your bounce back is quicker. And so, you know, it's just depends on the sports too. That you're trying to play. You're right. Three sports nowadays is pretty rare, and you probably won't find too many like top flight players playing three sports because they just don't have the time to commit to all three. They've if they're a top flight baseball player or a top flight football player, you know, it's really hard to find the time to fit in like a third sport, I think. I've got some quick hit questions for you. These are just like 1 to 2 sentence responses. First off, favorite moment in baseball, John?
I've had so many of them. I've got to do some really cool things. I had somebody fly me and my brother and some friends on a private jet to the World Series. And I got to experience being in the locker room when the Giants won the World Series in 2014. And a guy flew us on a private jet to Kansas City. I also got to experience being in the World Series parade and having 1 million people and on a 4-hour bus trip throughout San Francisco. Those were very, very cool things. And that was kind of at the pro level, you know, with my nephew.
Sure.
With my son and my other nephew, I would probably say the coolest thing we ever did in baseball is we got to the finals in Cooperstown when the kids were 12, 104 teams, and we're in the championship game. And I think those kids are going to remember that stuff for the rest of their lives. It's my son's one of his better moments. Also, my son as a freshman, which has never been done at Jesuit, he pitched. It was the first time a freshman at Jesuit's ever pitched, and he beat the number one team in Northern California 1-0 in a big playoff game. And they were in our league, and they beat us pretty good 2 weeks earlier. And he came in as a freshman and shut him out. That was a really, really cool experience. So. Got to do a lot of neat things on the pro side and the amateur side. So
absolutely, that's super cool. So I'm going to ask you. This is a Susackism. I made up a word, Susackism. So this a Susackism, something every player you've worked with or coached that would say, that's something Coach Susack would always say.
Easy. Hard work beats talent when talent fails to work hard. Hard work beats talent when talent, there's a lot of talented kids. And I also always tell kids, good is the greatest evil of great. If you're good, you get complacent. You don't want to be good. You want to be great. And a lot of kids get satisfied with I'm good enough.
Oh,
and
sure.
I always used to tell my kids that somebody else out there, I tell Andrew and hey, your competition's in Arizona, not in Sacramento. There's a kid doing blocking drills. You know, he wants to be great.
Exactly.
So don't be satisfied with just being good. Be satisfied with being great. And I think a lot of good players get a little complacent. They just, hey, I'm not gonna work out today. I'm good enough.
Absolutely. And so, okay, here's another one. Weirdest moment you've ever experienced in a game. Weirdest.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
So my two nephews are playing, Andrew and Matt. One is playing third base, one's pitching. And Andrew's pitching, he's 14, and Matt is 13. Matt makes two errors in a row at third base.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew's just mother effing him. You suck. You're horrible. Matt's yelling back. They're screaming at each other. Another ball gets hit to Matt. He comes in to get it, and it goes under his mitt, makes his third error. Andrew's just berating him. He screams back, picks up the baseball. My nephew does. Game is live. Throws the baseball as hard as he can at Andrew from about 20 feet away on the pitcher's mound. Ball's live. Guys are running around the bases. They're screaming and yelling. Me and my brother are coaching. And I've never, ever, ever seen that in a baseball game in my whole life. I got kicked out of the game and had to walk home. Insane. Insane. To the T. We still talk about that and laugh about it all the time.
Oh, yeah. Because they're like brothers, right? They're yeah. They're really like brothers.
Oh, this is the two brothers. This is the two brothers, Andrew and Matt.
Oh, and that's perfect. That's perfect because that's perfect. What would happen. They're like, no, I'm going to settle this.
He literally threw a ball and missed him. He literally threw it at him. Missed him. Like we're playing wiffle ball, you know, like you can peg him. And the game was live. The runners just kept, the ball goes into foul territory. Misses Andrew, goes into foul territory. The runners are messing around and we're losing. And my brother's going nuts. And I was laughing.
Oh, that is classic, man. That's awesome. That's awesome because that's like the true nature of brothers, right? When it comes down, but in the same breath, they've got each other's back no matter what. You know, I can do that to my brother, but nobody else better.
Yep, we just did it in front of everybody.
All right, so I've got one last question for you, and this is one I ask just about every guest, and just kind of gives me an idea of like who I'm talking to. I should have asked it first because then I would have been like maybe better prepared.
You put me in the hot seat, man.
I'm putting you in the hot seat. So here we go. So I always ask guests, so Batman versus Superman. Okay. Who do you choose?
Definitely Superman.
Yeah.
Superman. I can fly everywhere, right?
Yes.
I can fly the very strongest guy in the world. I don't have to drive a car. I can just fly there. Strongest man in the world. He's got a big chest. I like big chests.
It's short work. He'd make short work of Batman.
Easily. I just like flying, right?
Yeah.
I love it.
Exactly.
Batman had the Batmobile. The Batmobile was cool. The Batcave, the Batmobile was cool, but definitely
it's
Superman.
Very cool. But Superman gets thrown definitely off a building Superman. And flies. He catches himself. Batman
absolutely.
Gets thrown off a building. He goes splat. You are my guy. And you know what, John, I really appreciate your time. And because you have a really unique story, I think, just with your background of being first generation. And I know there's a whole bunch more story to that. You know, your story about with your boys, I thought it would be a great time for us to talk about like the before they were pros perspective. And I know Daniel is going to be, you know, we'll be talking about him real soon, and he's having a great year at Arizona, and I know Andrew's, you know, working through the Pirates organization, and I just wanted to say thanks for coming on tonight. It gave us a really different perspective that we have not had on Bushball, and you brought it. I mean, you brought the energy, and I really appreciated the stories and. And I'm sure there's a ton more we could talk about. I could talk to you for like hours about this stuff.
Yep, we could.
Yeah. But I appreciate it.
All right, Donnie. Absolutely, brother. Thanks.
You got it.
Thanks for reaching out, man. We'll keep in touch.
That's John Susak, everybody. Whew. John can bring it. You know, after talking to John, it makes me want to go work out or get better or just improve. He just seems like one of those guys that you just sit there and you nod when he's talking to you. And he just motivates people to do great things. And I got to tell you what I enjoyed most about John. John, in a nutshell, is a family man. And that just came through during our whole discussion. Everything that you heard today, none of it was about John or his brother Nick. It was about his kids. And he has developed some really successful kids who have developed very strong bonds with not only himself, but with his brother Nick. And that right there is worth more than any signing bonus or any career. And to me, the most important lesson that he ever taught his kids wasn't about baseball. It was about being a family, working hard, dedicating to be the best you can be. And so that's something that his kids are going to carry on for their entire lives. And my hat's off to John. Great family man, great baseball mind, and great dude to talk to. Have a great one, everybody. And we will see you on the next episode of Bushball.